Chapter 30, December 2057. The knock on the door came only minutes before midnight. Tash had been sitting in front of the smart wall, following the news, alone in the manor's flat, for much of Christmas Day. Now she got up, feeling a little stiff. "You're getting old, kid." Reduced the wall to a murmur with a soft command, and went to the front door. Outside, Mel and Jane were waiting, bundled up in heavy coats, their breath steaming around their hooded heads. "Merry Christmas," they said in unison. Mel held out a bottle, Jane some kind of parcel. But they both wore head torches, and after the dim lights of the lounge, Tash was immediately dazzled, barely glimpsing their faces. "Wow, Merry Christmas to you too, whoever you are." "Oops." Mel tapped her own torch to dim it, then reached over to do the same to Jane's. "Sorry about that. It's just the streets are so dark now." "I know. Come in, come in." As she bundled them into the warmth of the house, relative warmth, Tash looked out over a power-rationed Christmas night city. As Mel had hinted, the glow of the lamps, bus and tram stops, and other bits of illuminated street furniture stood out against a greater darkness. Eerie slabs of black on the walls that were long-dead ad posters. She retreated into the light and closed the door. Her guests stripped off their outer layers quickly and hung their coats over a banister. Another oddity they had all discovered through this year of a cooling earth. Houses adapted to climate crisis warming didn't always have great storage spaces for heavy, cold-weather clothing. In the living room, on the smart wall, muted news channels scrolled. Tash noticed her guest's gaze was drawn to a patch of brilliant white in one corner, the Antarctica landscape, where watchers were waiting for the solar eclipse. There was a soft chime, and they all reflexively glanced at their phones. "Midnight," Jane said. "Wow, that's the end of Christmas. We almost missed it. Sorry, Tash. Here, even if it's late." Jane handed Tash the gift she had carried. Tash took the gift and ruffled her red hair. "No problem." She noticed it wasn't Auntie Tash, as it had been even this time last year, say. But then Jane's 12th birthday had rolled around just a couple of weeks ago. Life went on, blink or no blink. Tash carefully removed a wrapping of fine white paper from the gift, set the wrap aside for the recycler, and held up a plastic bottle, what had been a bottle anyhow, and had now been sculpted, probably with a domestic laser, to create a kind of fantastical distorted house with doors and windows. "We did it at school," Jane said a little shyly. "I won a prize. Anyway, even if you don't like it, the bottle is an antique." Which Tash knew was true. Plastic from the peak stuff years still clogged the arteries of the planet, but actual period artifacts, even mass-produced like this one, were becoming hard to find. "Oh, I love it. Thanks." She kissed the top of Jane's head, a habit since Jane had been small, and she wistfully wondered how much longer she would get away with it. Jane said, "And sorry if you didn't actually get it on the day, quite." "That doesn't matter." "No, it's a bit rude," Mel protested, "to just show up so late. And we knew you were on your own. But you know how it is. Hard to get away from family." Tash knew that Mel's brother had hosted a virtual party for her wider family, from his own home on the outskirts of Oxford. "Especially when Uncle Paul starts preaching about Galaxias and God and stuff." "Never mind that now," Mel murmured. "The timing's not a problem," Tash said. "You haven't missed the eclipse, which isn't going to happen for another hour or so."
"Ha!"
Jane barked. "You mean it isn't not going to happen for an hour? Does that make sense?" Tash glanced at Mel, still hoping that she will call. He promised he would. "Though I doubt if he'll stay in touch long. You need a drink? You are still staying over, right? If you'll have us, thanks. Well, Dad's away, and I've made up the spare beds. Maybe a synth beer?"
"Me too,"
Jane said, "in your dreams." Tash said, "I'm having cola." She shrugged. "Prefer water." "No problem." Tash hustled for the drinks in the kitchen, just off the living room, while her guests took off more bits of clothing, hats, gloves, and sat down. "Actually, she really does prefer water. Mel said on Tasha's return. This lot are turning out to be an abstemious generation.
I don't know what that means, Jane said.
It means there's nothing much I can ban you from. They're even worse than us. The climate crisis kids, they used to call our generation. Hang-ups about manufactured goods and processed food and drink.
Boring, said Jane, lolling on a beanbag.
She took her water, reached up to clink it against Tasha's and Mel's glasses, sipped, and looked at the news channels idly. Royals at Balmoral, Tash saw. Snowdrifts in Surrey. The eclipse watchers in Antarctica were the only unusual item. She said, How about some food?
No thanks.
Hell no,
Jane said. Oh, Jane. We've been eating all day because of the Uncle Paul thing, Jane glanced at Tash. Unless you've got some chocolate.
Maybe.
Tash went back to the kitchen, fetched out a plate of biscuits, returned.
Only synth stuff, of course.
I sometimes wonder how many decades it has been since I've eaten anything that has been anywhere near an actual cocoa bean.
This'll do, Jane said, grabbing at the plate and shoveling in a biscuit almost whole.
Then she took a second and began to lick off the chocolate, cat-like, making smears around her mouth. Mel leaned over to admonish her again, but sat back with a sigh.
What the hell? It's Christmas, and it might be a long while before we even synth chocolate again.
What is this? Some kind of government issue? A gift for the drones? Tash sat and shook her head. They wouldn't dare pull such a stunt. Everybody already thinks House is one big hotel, don't they? Where we all lounge around in luxury while everybody else starves and shivers. No, I paid for those biscuits with a hefty chunk of my junior political advisor's salary.
Mel glanced at Jane, steadily working on the biscuit. Well, it's appreciated. It's nice to have some kind of relief from it all, isn't it?
Even just for one day. This time last year, I would never have thought we would be seeing rationing, power cuts. Not on this scale. Not again. We grew up with all this.
People are comparing it to a war, rather than the climate crisis, Tash said. That's what the opinion polls say. Dad says as much. His grandfather was a teenager during the Second World War, and he passed on stories of ration cards and queues at the butcher's.
Jane looked up.
Was he the Sputnik man?
No, Tash said. That was Dad's father. The Second World War one was Dad's grandfather. My great-grandfather.
What's a butcher?
Mel said. A person who sold meat for people to eat. Meat from an animal, I mean, not a printer.
Oh, never mind. So where is your father tonight?
Working on flood relief efforts in Yorkshire. Volunteer. He called a couple of hours ago. He's wet and cold, but fine. Sends his best wishes. They sat quietly for a while, eating, listening to the murmur of the smart wall, its changing light reflecting from their faces. The time seemed to flow by, Tash thought. The eclipse was due at 1:15. Maybe they'd all fall asleep before then. At length, Jane asked,
But are we at war? Like your great-granddad? A war with Galaxius?
Mel and Tash shared a look.
Good question, actually, Mel said.
Tash sighed.
Not legally. I'm the one who works with the politicians, I suppose. I should know. We aren't in any formal war with Galaxius. We haven't declared war. Partly because we don't know how to. There isn't actually a way for the world, for humanity as a whole, to declare war on anybody. No formal political way, I mean. A lot of our governance is still with the nation states, even after all the muddling up of the climate crises. But the states themselves evolve. Why, in Britain alone, we don't have the same nation states as we did 100 years ago. But the rules still apply. The rules of international conduct. Jane frowned around a mouthful of biscuit. So, say England could declare war on Scotland.
Exactly. And if we did, there would be various international treaties that would come into play, such as about humane treatment of prisoners of war. But if we did go to war as a species, as a world, with some extraterrestrial power, well, of course, it's unprecedented. And a mess, diplomatically.
Why, we saw that in the November conference at Dogger. I think the high-ups hoped, so I heard from Fred Bowles, that we would come out of that with some kind of unanimity of purpose, or at least a unanimity of response mechanisms, agreed among the nation-states, and then perhaps mediated by the FIS. The Secretary-General, as a spokesperson for the Earth, giving some universally agreed statement. She smiled. Dad says it was that way in all the old movies, when the aliens invaded.
Not all of them, Mel said. Charlie Marlowe likes that old stuff, or rather she likes to pick holes in it.
In The Day the Earth Stood Still, the 2051 anniversary remake anyhow, the nations of the world couldn't agree.
Boring, said Jane.
Instead of which, Tash said, the Dogger sessions were dominated by two nations, or rather two powerful blocs, the Americans and their cheerleaders, and the Chinese and theirs, both of them promoting their own secretive strategy over Galaxias, without giving out enough information for any of it to be fully understood. Neither side could trump the other, or yield to the other. And for better or worse, no agency, such as the FIS, had the legal authority to ban their projects, or even endorse them.
Well, at least they were talking.
It wasn't Yalta. But I think Fred came away feeling it could have been worse.
Yalta?
Jane shrugged and looked at the wall images. Mel said, so we accept we're doing both. The space projects, both She's dark energy warship. Jane opened her eyes wide.
A warship? Cool.
Don't exaggerate, Mel, Tash said, her smile a little forced. I deal with the press and the media every day. I have to fend off language like that all the time. Mel nodded.
Okay, sorry, but actually, as Charlie Marlowe points out, and I agree with her, I think,
with the Pioneer mission anyhow, we are probably responding to Galaxias in the right way, on one level, responding with actions, not words, just as the blink was an action. A communication in concrete form, as opposed to the symbolism of other tokens on the moon, around the lurker. But on the other hand, by allowing the two national rivals to go ahead with their parallel efforts, we are sending out muddled signals, to say the least.
Then again, said a voice from the TV, we are a muddled species, aren't we?
They all turned, startled. Wu Shi, dressed in a blue coverall, was grinning out of a corner of the screen, while muted news images scrolled around him, all against the background of a huge Jones Swoosh and Spaceship logo. Jane jumped and waved.
Can you see me? Hi, Uncle Shi.
Hi, Jane. Happy birthday, belatedly. You sent me a message on the day.
You got that. Good.
Loving the chocolate moustache look.
Is that in at the moment?
She laughed, blushed, and wiped her mouth with the back of her hand. Sorry to bother you, and sorry to hack into your system. You did once give me a key code in case of emergencies, Tash.
Tash waved back.
Don't apologise, you idiot. You know you were invited. How's California?
Well, it's still the middle of Christmas Day here. Dull, cold.
Not as cold as you are.
People in this state are saying they miss the wildfire years.
Anyhow, as I was saying, we're muddled. We aren't even a single, political block,
which for all we know may have been a stage of Galaxias's own evolution into the unified entity it seems to be now. We aren't a unity like it is.
So maybe it's appropriate that the gestures we make are somewhat contradictory too.
Tash shook her head.
She.
At least it's honest.
Oh, sorry, what?
There's just enough time delay to be awkward, isn't there?
It's typical of you, Shi. We don't hear from you for months. Then you just launch into a lecture on galactic diplomacy. How are you? You, not the galaxy.
A grin, again slightly time delayed.
I'm sorry.
You're quite right. I do get immersed, don't I? Although you will understand that all this is very personal for me, which is why my mother encourages me to keep in touch with you guys.
You keep me grounded, she says.
Sane, in some ways, I would say. Even if we may disagree half the time.
Tash grinned.
You and us, or you and your mother?
I'm not keeping score. Mel said. How is your mother?
Busy, I imagine. We don't have a lot of contact.
Mel said, well, that's a pity. Sometimes it feels like we've all spent the whole year since the blink just trying to get the Americans and Chinese to talk about it. She grunted. Mostly through me and my mother, in fact.
You work with what you've got, Tash said. I'm sorry if we were manipulative, though.
She shrugged. Okay, well, there's no rush. The deadline is 11 years away. I guess there's plenty of time to sort it out. That left Tash baffled. Deadline? 11 years? Mel, a veteran of this kind of confrontation, winked at Jane and silently mouthed, 3, 2, 1. Tash snapped. All right, damn you. You know me too well. What happens in 11 years? We get Galaxius's response. Possibly. He left that hanging in the air. Tash asked at last, response to what? To our actions since the blink. Especially our immediate response. You see, we believe that Galaxius and its tech is limited to light speed, remember that? And we also believe from the exoplanet astronomy results that its nearest communications node is at Barnard Star. Which is 5.96 light years away? Jane said briskly. Everybody knows that. Then her mouth dropped open. Oh, I see. I think I know what you're getting at. Right, she said. Right. So a message from the Moon Lurker will take a bit less than 6 years to get out there. Any response can come no sooner than a further a bit less than 6 years beyond that. Starting back at the blink itself in January takes us to the end of 2068. A bit less than 12 years after the blink. So anyhow, we have a period of grace before Galaxias can intervene again, at least in terms of responding to anything we've done. Makes sense. Makes perfect sense, Tash said. While the cat's light years away. Serena Jones has rounded it down to a decade, like Apollo's decade, to get to the moon. But she's planning to get our space shot up and running long before the time is up. He glanced at something out of shot. Hey, it's nearly eclipse time. Then I'll have to run, I'm sorry. Back to work. Jane snorted. At Christmas? We famous astronauts have deadlines to meet. Although they did put a sprig of mistletoe into one of the simulators. Jane frowned. What's mistletoe? Tell you later, Tash said. She, keep in touch. Don't wait for Easter. Whenever the hell they work out Easter should be. We miss you. Mel murmured confirmation. I know. I'm sorry. I guess I've been self-absorbed. I did have one hell of a year. Well, we all did. And now I'm hellish busy. But I don't mean to shut you out. I'll stay on the line for the eclipse. A minute to go, right? Tash glanced at the clock on the smart wall. It read not quite 1:15. A screen that was filling up with images of the southern sky now as the deadline for the first contact approached. The moment when the moon's edge, seen from the Earth, touched the sun. Or should have. Tash was distracted by glimpses of Antarctica itself. Camera pans, establishing shots, mostly blue sky over white ground. But in some of the images, there were bare, rocky stretches where the ice had receded during the climate crisis summer and had yet to advance again in the Galaxius winter. There were even patches of green, lichen, maybe. Mel murmured, this is a rare event. Two total eclipses in a year. Or would have been. The last was 1889, the next will be 2252. Or would have been, Jane chanted. Right, Mel smiled. Charlie is down there, you know. On Sky Thrust, like in January, over Antarctica, watching in comfort. Tash grinned. Wouldn't you sooner be there, rather than shivering in this government-issue hovel? Well, it would have topped and tailed a year that has been utterly bizarre. She reached out for Jane's and Tasha's hands. No, I'd rather be with you all. Jane was watching the timings carried by the straplines under the various copies of the sun image. Nearly there. A countdown. 3, 2, 1. The sun's disk, seen through filtered lenses, was of course unblemished. A moment of silence. 2, 3, 4. Now I'm wondering why we're all doing this, Mel said. Half the planet losing sleep, waiting for an eclipse that we knew was never going to happen. Jane shrugged. We knew what the scientists were saying, about Earth's new orbit and all. We just had to see if it was real, that's all. She just nodded. Exactly, kid. It's real, all right. I love you all. I have to go. And his image winked out.